Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a Bucks legend. This is Here District with Marcus Johnson, alongside his son and 1995 NCAA champion, Chris. Here's MJ.
All right, welcome everybody to Here District. I'm the captain of this vessel, first mate Chris Johnson, my son, the only father and son tandem in the history of NCAA basketball to win a national championship at the same school, UCLA. So
congratulations on that one.
Appreciate you, man.
Yeah, that's cold right there. That's cold. I thought, you know, two great sports feats that I really loved was when I was younger, when I saw Ken Griffey Jr. steal the pop fly from his dad. You know, when he was standing there in center court.
Yes, sir.
He ran and took it. That was one of the coldest sports moments as a kid. And then as an adult, watching, you know, what LeBron did with his son, man, that's cold. Cats can hate on that man. They can hate on that man all they want. But from a business standpoint, that father-son move right there, bro, if I had the juice, I would have did a Rick Barry. All four of them would have been playing. Everybody would have got checks. Everybody would have got money. Everybody would have got pension, 401. That league would take care of you now if you take care of it.
Facts.
And that's where we're headed today. Now, listen, Buck fans, we're going to get into Gary Trent Jr. and his initial signing with the Bucks, coming back with the Bucks, re-upping, which we're all excited about, especially, man, the way he tore things up in Naptown, and Gary Trent Sr. was right next to me, to my right, man, being the coach that he was. But this episode is about fathers and sons, man, and just reading your story, your backstory, man, it just, oh, man, I get chills and tingles just in terms of what you had to go through to get where you got. And people, I never knew. I mean, you know, I just never knew until I started doing some prep for this podcast. I didn't know that you were selling crack cocaine on the streets of Columbus at 11, 12, 13, 14 years old. I mean, just to help your family make ends meet. I mean, you out there grinding. You out there hustling, getting dropped off at 3 a.m. in the middle of the streets, you know, as a youngster before high school. I mean, when you think about that stuff, man, you think about how blessed that you've been, how fortunate you've been, first of all, to be alive and to get out of it unscathed in that perspective. But also, Gary, just to do what you were able to do, three-time MAC player of the year, get to the league, play the way you played, and be the force that you became as a basketball player. Can you walk us through a little bit of that, man, in terms of – I don't want to hear – a whole lot of specific, but just that journey for you, first of all, getting from where you grew up to where you wound up as an NBA player.
Well, you know, man, my father was the first person in Ohio charged as a cocaine kingpin. You remember when they started the War on Drugs? I don't know if you remember Time Magazine. They spelt it out in fire on the cover, the War on Drugs, back in the 80s.
Sure.
So,
I lived through it, bro. Your dad Dexter was in prison in, I think, Kentucky or somewhere. Got a life sentence. So
yep.
that was kind of weird for me, you know, just dealing, being a drug dealer, kingpin. I guess that was probably the reason why. But go ahead.
Well, you know, when he was more of the disciplinarian, you know, fathers are always the bad guy in the home, because you, as a real father, you're going to be the one to establish law and order, man. You're the one that's going to have to say no. You're going to have to make executive decisions to override sometimes what your children think. And, you know, when you have sons and you have a mother, now that I'm a father, once your son start doing like this to his mom and seeing who taller and this and that, that's about the time he's going to start talking back.
Bucking up.
She got to say everything 5-6 times to get it done. And you even know the dad is the one that the father is the one to establish law and order, because the first thing your mom is going to say, okay, I'm going to call your dad, or wait till your dad get home. That lets you know that daddy got to be the bad guy. So, you know, a lot of fathers don't get their flowers until later in life because, you know, mom licking all the wounds. Oh, it's okay, baby, dad. Like, I don't want to hear that. A few cuss words at you. But once my dad went away as a disciplinarian, you know, my mom was already getting high, and she was already strung out from like about 83, 84. You know, man, I was born into dysfunction and born into hood and violence and whatnot. You know, just, you know what I'm saying? Just because of the people that my family was, you know, 14 people that never graduated, never went to college. How was they to lead me or tell me what to do? Talk to me about college or any of that? All of them was street life. So, you know, my mom's state of mind. You know, she already strung out. You know, we living in Ohio, man, 2 years with no hot water, no gas in the home. So I really actually ended up trying to get a job at first. I went to Long John Silver's. I went in there with my Social Security card. I was 14. I'm standing taller than the manager. So dude asked me, how old are you? I said, I'm 16. He's like, you got some ID? I said, no, the police took it in the neighborhood sweep. I'll get it back in a couple of weeks. So all I had was my Social Security card. He said, okay. Now, I already knew I wasn't old enough, but I'm standing taller than him. No type of peach fuzz or nothing, right? They were so thirsty, dude, do the interview from 2 to 2:30 talking to me. He asked me, do I want to watch the orientation videos of how to clean the greaser and the VAT machine? Oh, I said, yeah, I can watch it. That was from 2:30 to 3. But he said, when can you start? I said, man, I can start whenever. He said, you want to start today? I said, yeah, I can start today. Man, I work 3 to 1. Closed first night.
Yes,
so,
sir.
Yeah, so he needed employees as bad as I needed employment. The problem was I'm working till 1 and the bus come at 5:45. So I'm trying to get off work, come home, do that. Now, mind you, I didn't understand anything about taxes or nothing like that. I'm getting $3.35 an hour. You know what I'm saying? That's before taxes. So you already know what that means. So I'm walking home every night. I'm tired. And I'm watching my friends, you know, telling me the next day at school what they did at basketball. So it got to the point, man, I couldn't go to school no more because I was trying to work. And, you know, my mom, you know, being in a household where the parents are not really functional, she'd just come knock on my bedroom door because I slept in the basement. She'd be like, are you going to school? I'd touch the window and be like, no, it's too cold. She'd be like, all right. Then one day I told my mom I was tired of working and I had got my first check. And what's crazy about it, man, is, you know, all them years in school, I could never get grams, ounces and pounds in math class. My mom sat me down in the kitchen on a triple beam and weighed out that 7. Like, my mom was outside. She was real street.
Let me ask you this. Because this is filled with a lot of just heavy stuff. What, when you said you worked at Long John Silver when you were 14, what happened between the age of 11, where you were heavily involved in everything, and the age of 14? Like, what was the turning point for you to say, I'm going to stop being in these streets and I'm going to get me a job?
I actually was in the streets with my mom's boyfriend at the time. He just used to have me run packs up to cabs. Like, hey, run this down the street to the cab. Run this down the street. So that started at about like 12, 13. I wasn't doing my own thing. He just had me running up and down the block, you know, because, you know, the minors don't really get in trouble. Plus, I'm not looking like I'm doing nothing. I wasn't exchanging no money. By the time I got 14, I had been outside enough to the point where I'm like, man, if I'm doing this, running them down the block like this, and it's this easy, thinking it was this easy because I was never under no police pressure. I never wasn't accepting no money, making no trades. All I do is run to the window, run into the car window, run into the car window. So then once I got my job, that's how I started doing my own thing. You know what I'm saying? I didn't want nobody to front me or nothing. You know, her mindset was this. You know, when people ask her, like, how could you do that to your son? Why would you put them out there? She'd be like, you know, that was all she knew. That was all our family knew. And in her mind, you know, I'm just helping prepare him. And if my son gonna get out here in the streets, let me show him.
Sounds like just a crazy, crazy existence, man. I mean, I'm sure law enforcement, you had to, you know, elude that situation, other fiends and the craziness that's been out there. I've seen it firsthand. But where did basketball, how did basketball come into play? Were you able to place on the playgrounds regularly?
My freshman year, we had the preview game. And we had the preview game at school, at a away school, and we ended up being some mischief. We stole the lock. We stole the clock out of the wall. You know them big clocks? That was the Flavor. We stole the clock out the wall.
You rocked it?
No. I'm talking about the big clock. It's like
the real big ass.
The big white clock. Now, it was in my book. It was in my gym bag. So we passing it around on the bus, and some kid was holding it up going, Flavor, and the coach saw it, took us back to the school, and turned the clock in. So the next day, the assistant principal interviewed everybody and canceled the team because, you know, we was acting a fool as freshmen. He's like, nah, we ain't having that. So he canceled the team. But the reason I got into basketball, man, me and my mom, you know, we living in a house we ain't got no hot water for the last 2 years. And every time I come home, you know, our house was like the Taj Mahal because everybody knew my mom and dad. So if you bought some dope two streets over, you could come over there and tell my mom, hey, what's up? I got something. And then come over our house and get hot. I was tired of that. And I'm, you know, my dad gone. Plus, like I told you about the tall thing, I'm getting bigger. I'm taller. I'm 14. Now, I ain't trying to hear none of that. And I'm getting my own money, so I don't need to listen to nobody. That's the mindset. So, you know, I started crying. I'm like, man, I got to get out of here. This is, they smoke in the house, something like this. So this is the first time I bucked up to my mom. I took about 4 or 5 deep breaths and was like, I'm going anyway. And, you know, she had other black girls. They're like, what, girl, who are you talking to you like that? So by the time she come down there high, I like run in the kitchen and just stand in the corner like this. I ain't even know what to do. I ain't never really talked back to my mom. And I got mad. And I had one of them LL Cool J big radios that took the 8D batteries. I was like, I don't need this S. I'm tired of this. And I grabbed my radio and started walking down the street, man. I got to the end of the alley. I'm out there crying. And I got to the end of the alley, man. I ain't had nowhere to go. So I had to go right back to the crack house. You know what I'm saying? And just sit there and went in my room in the basement and cried. And then it got to the point where my auntie, her sister, my mom's only sister, they had an agreement like he might as well come and live with me. My aunt was in the suburbs. So when I step out her front door, it was none of that. Wasn't no strip. Plus this 88 in the suburbs, really wasn't no crack and none of that out there. Once I lived with my aunt, it wasn't no action. So it took me away from, you know, being able to just step out into the war zone every day. I still would catch a ride over there and have homies come pick me up, but I wasn't 24/7 in the mix. I ended up living with her. One day, the guy who was a basketball coach told me I should come to Open Gym. So just so happened one day after school, I missed the school bus. Now we live in a Section 8 apartment. So I got a few homeboys that was like, man, just come to Open Gym. We give you a ride after school. I come, I end up playing. The coach come to me and say, hey, you pretty athletic, man. You should try out for the team. So I try out for the team. I make JV. I played the first JV game. I scored 20 points in the first half. He moved me up to varsity that night. Because you know how when you play
JV that night, varsity,
you play like two quarters and two quarters. Now, mind you, though, that was the first time I'd ever been on a basketball team. I never played basketball till I was 15. I never, because my freshman year, I had got removed from school because after that clock incident, when the principal like, hey, we need to call your parents. I hit him with the old school. We ain't got no phone, you know. So he like, well, your mom, you can't come back to school till your mom call us. I go home and tell my mom, mom, got in trouble at school. They removed me. I can't come back till you call. But don't call back for a couple weeks because I'm trying to get my money up. She said, OK, never called him. So I'm living with my aunt. I made the team. Coach moved me up to varsity that night. I just got in like for a couple of spot minutes. You know, it was a couple of guys that grew up in that area. They was kind of ball hogging. So they wasn't really going to give me the opportunity. Plus, I went to a school that had 700 students and it was only like 25 blacks when I moved out there. And it's in the 80s. So, you know, a lot of places like Ohio wasn't really with the interracial. You know, I live in Minnesota now. It's all about interracial couples like Phoenix and Seattle and Minnesota and Ohio. You weren't allowed to date white girls and stuff like that without people looking at you funny or like, wow, you doing that? Like, you know what I'm saying? So really, when I went to that suburb school, it wasn't really like, you know, I was out of place really because my first 10 years of school, I went to 8 different schools.
Yeah.
I went to 8 different schools. My 8th school was the school, my high school. I finished there 10th, 11th, 12th. That was my 8th school. So that was the place that I spent the most time at. But other than that, I was always hopping around and, you know, we was always in transition just due to our lifestyle and things like that. And I averaged like, I think about 14 points, you know, and things worked out. And then my junior year, we came back and it was the same team. But just so happened, one of the guys that was a ball hog had became ineligible. So now the 1-2 punch became me and another guy. And then my junior year, I ended up averaging like 24 and 12 and about 3 blocks. And that's when I really started learning how to play basketball. But the thing was, I didn't have any moves. I didn't have no skill. I was just an explosive, aggressive athlete. Like everything I shot was inside the charge circle. Like my junior year, I shot 75% from the floor. Then my senior year, I came back like totally confident, knowing everything to do. I averaged like 32 points, 16 boards. 6 assists and 7 blocks a game. I got state player of the year. first team All-State.
Was that you shot? Did you shoot 81% from the field that year?
81.4. Because like I said, but listen,
still a record.
Yeah, still. Bill Walton had the record at 79. I broke Bill Walton's record. And here's the thing. I shot 75 the year before and shot that 81. But like I said, I had no moves. If it wasn't, it was either a dunk, a putback dunk, an alley-oop layup. Every shot I took in my life had to go off the glass if it wasn't a dunk. I wasn't doing nothing outside the paint because I didn't have no moves. I didn't have nothing. I'm bully balling to the hole. Like, I was a Shaq and Giannis in high school. Like, I'm getting to the hole. I don't care what y'all talking about.
Bruh.
Left shoulder dip. And it wasn't no drop step moves or nothing. I'm going to just get the ball and just full steam. Hey, hand me the ball, fourth and one. Every time I get the basketball, it's fourth and one,
But that brings me to this point. And see, this is interesting. This is interesting, and this is going right into the father-son thing. Because when I was coming up, my dad was a high school coach. He taught me the fundamentals. He taught me how to handle, and I could dribble. I didn't miss layups. I was a layup master. I had spin moves, all that good stuff. Elgin Baylor was my hero. But my dad was a 40s and 50s guy, so it was a one-handed push shot.
Yes.
So I never learned how to shoot a correct jump shot.
Yeah, yeah.
But I swore to God, with Chris, it started with Chris, my other four sons. They're all great shooters. Chris, Reggie Miller, and Tracy Murray, the only three players in UCLA history to shoot 50% from the floor, 40% from the three-point line, 80% from the free throw line.
Yeah.
Only three players. But now, so I read about you and your son and how the emphasis was on dribbling. I mean, you really wanted to not have him follow that pattern that you had established.
I knew that I was an undersized power forward. So once I went through all those years in the league, you know, I used to go to Pete Newell's camp them first 3 years in the league. You know, I learned all that footwork. Kiki Vandeweghe was teaching all that stuff. So I learned all that. So when my son was coming up.
I taught Kiki Vandeweghe all that stuff. Yeah. He was in my big man's camp at UCLA, but he was 15, 16 years old at Palisades High School, man.
So I knew to have my son be a dribbler and a shooter because I never knew if he was going to be my size or not. And if you my size and you can dribble and shoot, then that just makes your game more lethal. And if you don't become my size and you a point guard size, a Chris Paul or somebody, you're going to definitely need to learn how to dribble and shoot. So those were my emphasis on him growing up dribbling and shooting. That's why if you look at his jumper and look at mine, one is night and one is day, you know?
Yeah. But now you also talked about, you know, you kind of gave him like four or five essentials that he needed to focus on.
Five steps.
And I put it to Chris too. When Chris was at a private school out in the Valley, you know, middling kind of competition, I told him, if you want to be big time and go to a major D1 school, you got to go to Crenshaw. You got to go to the inner city. You got to play against the best if you want to be the best. He did that. He was, you know, city player of the year and all that good stuff. Two-time state champion. But with your son, you at 5, 6, 7 years old, you just put it to him like man, I didn't have man
any. When I first started doing his player development, I didn't have any blueprint. So I was like, okay, I just need to get everything got to be volume and everything got to be high reps. So I took my son to the track. Where I used to go to middle school at, and I said, son, I want you to dribble me a lap. Dribble me a lap with your left hand. I said, it's not a sprint. I'm just making you do dribbles. I said, every 100 meters, I want you to stop. Give me 10 push-ups. Give me 10 sit-ups. So I will make him do one lap with his left, another with his right, another with his left, and then the fourth lap will be crossovers, and then the fifth lap will be plyometric skips, and the sixth lap will be just dribble, sprint, dribble. But you had to stop every 100 meters and give me 10 push-ups, 10 sit-ups. That's 160 push-ups, 160 sit-ups on the five-year-old. You know, I was a big fan of Bobby Knight, and I was a big fan of, like, grind work. Like, just grind you to death. Just
yep.
you
want to
quit.
Yep.
Like, just work till you want to quit, and then when you want to quit, I ain't going to let you. Mm-mm. And, you know, I didn't have no blueprint. I didn't really know what to do. I just know if I keep him volume dribbling, volume shooting, you know, so we'd do all that dribbling. And then I just take him in front of the rim and just make him stand there. Because I had a rim in the driveway that I lowered. And I would just make him stand there, take one step layup, you know, because I lowered it to like 7 feet or something. Just one step layup. And I just taught him to layup, left hand, right hand, and dribbling. And then as he got older, we start moving back. and whatnot, because people start them kids too early on the jump shots, and you make it a heave instead of a form jump shot. So I want him to stand in front of the rim just with that form, just to lock on that elbow and whatnot. And, you know, because I used to always use Dirk as an example, because when you watch pictures of Dirk, that elbow be locked, you know. And like I tell him, I should see your armpit. I should be able to see your armpit when you shoot your jumper, because if not, that means you didn't shoot it up and then you shot it forward. If you ever see some of his pictures, you know how he be kind of like leaning back.
Yeah.
I got. If I can't see your armpit, you didn't put no arch on it. You didn't give it a chance. You know, because the deeper you go, you got to put arch on that thing. I need to see your armpit.
When I was coming up, MJ was sort of had that mentality too, that go hard, the grind mentality with me. Yeah. So we used to just do a bunch of hard stuff all the time. I was running hills. You know, I'm doing crazy leaper workouts. I'm doing all type of stuff. Every plyos, we on the track doing this mile and running 400s, all type of stuff. But my question to you, I love that stuff, right? So it wasn't really a thing where burnout was ever really an issue for me. Now with little Gary, was burnout ever a thing with y'all, or did Gary from Jump Street just embrace the work and just love the work?
He embraced it from day one. I asked him, because you love basketball. Plus, my son was young. He was old enough, even though he was young, that he could watch me in the summer league still when I would come home. And like, you know, summer league is usually high school gyms. So he could sit right there on the floor. And I would tell him, son, when I catch the ball, I'm going to do this move. I'm talking to him during the game. My son can hear me and a defender. Son, when I catch the ball, I'm going to do this move. And he knows it. And he's not going to be able to stop it because I got to counter if he do. And my son would sit there and watch that. So when I guess watching my success and, you know, loving basketball, the work was easy for him. The challenge throughout the work is not to strip a child of his childhood to where he resent what y'all doing. So to find that balance, I would do things like, this Saturday, you got two games on Saturday, two on Sunday, but your best friend is having a birthday party with seven or eight kids. So I would tell my son simply, look, man, first off, all seven or eight of them ain't your friends. Two or three of them is your friends. So here's what you do. Pick two or three of them guys. And then next weekend, when you don't have a tournament, we'll do a sleepover. We go to movies. We go to Chuck E. Cheese. Because I don't want him to feel like every time something fun comes up, I'm making him grind and work. And that's where kids get that resentment, because parents got to find that balance. You know, it was easy for me to find a balance being a former athlete. But, you know, I've coached kids since he was 5 years old. All his football teams, all his basketball teams, his soccer team, ain't nobody coached my kids but me without me being on the staff. So what I had to do was make sure I didn't make him resent working hard. I didn't make him resent trying to be something. So I would find that balance for him, like, hey, next weekend we'll do this. So as long as he got something to hold on to, as long as he can still see some fun in his future and some childhood, because you got to realize, man, you're trying to take a 5-year-old and basically tell him, I need a 14-year internship out of you for a maybe. You might get a scholarship. You might get a D3. You might get a D1. I got to get you 5 days a week, grind you two tournaments a month, sometimes three, all winter, all half the summer for 14 years of your life for a maybe. Mm. You know, that's a hell of a sale, especially when a kid is five and don't really understand it, you know?
Yeah. Well, that maybe manifested itself, man. So how did it feel, man? Well, first let me ask you this, and Chris understands where I'm coming from. Was there ever a moment, Gary, when Gary Jr. bucked up to you, and just like that rubber meets the road moment when that son starting to
I'm tired of this.
Feel himself a little bit.
When he got about 11 or 12,
you do a suicide. Yeah.
Not that bad. But when he got about 11 or 12, he, I'll be like, hey, let's do this drill. And you can see the little attitude in the shoulders and the body. Like, oh, hey, man, what? Like, hold up.
I lived it. Yes.
You know, about 11 or 12, about sixth grade, because I was meticulous.
Yeah.
Do it again.
Yeah.
And see, kid think I made the layup. No, it's not about the layup. It was about the footwork and how you were supposed to protect the ball getting to the layup. In competition, you're not going to get to the layup if this footwork ain't right. And now I'm having to do a little more verbal exchange, and now I'm having to bark a little louder. You know what I'm saying? And now, you know, now yeah. these is more of the days. Now we riding home in the car with the pout. I had to cuss you out. I had to threaten you. You know what I'm saying? And all those things. Now Woo. I ain't nice no more now. Cause now every time I it was even before the workouts, when I pull up, as soon as we get in the parking yeah. lot, hey, I don't want no shit today. We gonna do yep. it like this. Like I'm pre-cussing you out. So I don't have to get yep. into it during the workout.
For
you
sure.
know what right. I'm saying? I'm cussing you out for in the sure. car. Right there. Once I pull up and park, you can come in here today with that BS if you want to, blah, 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 blah. So, you know what I'm saying? We on that now. So the workouts had to, you know, they had to come with some threats on the yep. beginning because just, you know, and then you got to realize, it's, you know, it's July. You got friends outside and here I got you in the gym and, you know what I'm saying? Everybody done told, man, we great go to the swimming pool. We going to do this with them. But what he started seeing was, okay, all your friends are going to go to the swimming pool or your friends doing Madden or playing a video game. Okay, cool, son. By the time we go do a 90-minute workout, I started breaking down him the science of, all right, cool. Your friends got on the game. They played two games of Madden. By the time they was done with them two games and it was your turn, you done got your workout in.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
he was able to buy into that because he already could see, okay, cool. I just lost the game. I'm going to go work out for 90 minutes. By the time I come back, they still going to be sitting on the couch doing the same thing. You didn't miss nothing. You missed two games. Right. So I was able to let him see that and he started processing it. And I'm going to tell you something that really shocked me, which when I knew my son was on his business, he was in eighth grade, you know, hormones raging. You know, you popular now, you know, you playing JV, starting JV, yep. leading them in scoring, you're on varsity as an eighth grader. He left his phone on the table one day and I got it before it locked. So I'm going through the messages and I seen him tell this little girl, she say, what are you going to do today? He said, I'm about to go work out with my dad. She said, you do that every day. You can do that anytime. Come over here and hang out with me and such and such. He said, this one I knew was on his game. He said, nah, I'm going to go work out with my dad. I can do what y'all talking about any day. Mm. When I seen that as a middle school eighth grader, I was like, you know, that made me feel good. Like, okay, he on his business. Because cats in the league will be like, hey, man, I need to push the workout back. Because like, they ain't never done nothing. Like, come on, man. You and your fifth year in the league, and a girl can call you and make you push your workout back. Bro, you immature.
Yeah. Sure.
Like I tell my son, I tell my younger sons, hey, listen. Last week, we were scheduled to work out at 9 in the morning. So whatever come up in your life, 9 o'clock was already booked the week before. That's so if mine. You stayed up mine. Late or you tried yep. to watch a movie late or you decided to do this late, you can't push your professional. I told JR this when he was in high school, man. Life is not about what you want to do. 90% of life is what you have to do.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? I should tell him that all the time. Because there's times you don't want to work out. There's times you don't want to get up in the cold. There's times you don't want to go out there and have to jumpstart your car, you know?
Right. But listen, man, listen. What I'm hearing, and this is what I want you to touch on too, because, and I read somewhere where your friends were teasing you about being like Joe Jackson because you're
pushing. Oh, yeah, they still do. But my young ones.
But all this, and Chris knows from his son Will. We all three of us have won league championships, the first
Pac-10, Pac-10.
But my point is, G, is that it's born out of love. We want to see our sons do better than we do.
Man, my dad used to say that to me, and I used to tell my son that to this day. Don't be like me, be better than me. Anything I can do, however good my math was at 8 years old, your math should be that good at 6. However good your reading was, my reading was at 10 years old, your reading should be that good at 8, or I didn't do what I was supposed to do because I know better now as a parent.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think people, they think we're doing it because we want to live vicariously through our sons and see them succeed and my daughter see her succeed. No, I'm doing it because I know you love it. I know you have a passion for it. And once you tell me that your goal is to make it as far as you can as a basketball player, then it's incumbent upon me the knowledge and skills that I have to pass that on to you, pour into you as much as I can, and let's see what happens. But it's done out of love, man. It's not done out of anything else. But it's not ego.
Tell JR that.
It's love.
I tell him simple as this. You want to play basketball? Okay, cool. I'm going to put the dance steps on the floor. You follow these dance steps. This is going to increase your opportunity. This don't guarantee you college. This don't guarantee you pro. But this is going to make sure that you are better than average, and this is going to increase your opportunity because, you know, the way I kept my son focused, I would tell him, hey, son, let me explain something to you about going to the league. Your professional life can and will affect your personal life. But your personal life can never affect your professional life. And what I mean by that, your professional life, you're going to miss birthdays. You're going to miss some Thanksgiving gatherings. You're going to miss some Christmases. That's your professional life affecting your personal life. But your personal life cannot affect your professional life, whether it's catching drinking and driving later in life or domestic violences or any type of shenanigans that ain't got nothing to do with basketball. So, you know, once I think he started processing that in high school, your professional life can and will affect your personal life because a lot of people let their personal life affect their professional life. Because even in the league, you know, Flip always used to say, like, when we go into Miami, because you believe in Minnesota, it's cold. So we go into Miami or we going to go to play the Lakers or play the Clippers. And he always say, hey, this ain't a vacation. It's a business trip. You know what I'm saying? You cats get out there. You know, I done seen cats, you know, we done went to Miami one time. One of my teammates, you know, me and one of my teammates was like, man, we landed. It's like 1 o'clock. We like, man, we got to at least take a little quick victory lap around South Beach just to see something now. You know what I'm saying? We can pull a rabbit out of hat right quick, you know, on the late night tip. You know, you feel confident in yourself. If I step in here, somebody going to holler at me, you know? So we have a quick little victory lap. Boom. So as we leave in the club, we see all these bottles and sparklers. I'm like, damn, somebody getting ready to turn up. Look, one of our teammates. I'm like, damn, boy, it's 3 in the morning. You got 2 Magnum Cristals coming and a Grey Goose. I'm like, oh, yeah. He ain't got – we had this little joke from, I think, the movie Life. You ain't get them country boys nothing. You remember that? You ain't get them country what was that? The damn janky promoter. I ain't get them dollar bill. I ain't get them country boys nothing. So that was a joke on our team. When you showed up the game night and you was weak and, boy, you ain't get the rebounds you was supposed to be like, oh, you ain't give us country boys nothing tonight, huh? Because you know every team got your all inside jokes.
Yes, sir.
Sure, sure. So, yes, sir.
You know how at the 45-minute mark, you go back in the locker room, to go over the game plan, scout report assignment. Then at about the 19-minute mark, you come up for layup line. Boy, a buddy that was at the club with us, he show up in the locker room with 26 on the clock.
Wow.
You know, the game is 5:30. You know, with the game at 7, right, you got to be there at 5:30. Yeah. Buddy showed up at about 6:48. It was like when we leaving out the locker room, I'm looking at the last clock on the wall. We passing him as we on our way to the floor. It's 6:48, 6:50. By the time he got dressed, he came out to the layup line with 11 minutes to go because he had to get taped on. I'm like, damn, 11-minute warm-up. So that's where your personal life has affected your professional life. And that's what and when you're trying to succeed, you can't have that.
Mm-mm. Well, talk about succeeding. So now how did it feel for you? Let's fast forward. Gary Jr. is a McDonald's All-American. I saw you holding the jersey, just beaming with pride. He's making a college decision. Coach K, Duke, Grayson Allen, all these great players down at Duke, 7 freshmen coming in. What did that feel like to see it all kind of come together and see the you know the fruition of all that work that you guys put in? When it got to that point, man, did you bust a tear? Did you get emotional, or did you feel like this is just another step on the way to where we want to go?
No, I was very proud of him, and I never busted a tear because to me, every time he accomplished something at the next level, in my mind, you were supposed to because this is what we work for. So I was never surprised. I was never like, oh, my God, fine, you made it. And like, no, you were supposed to make it. It was written on you. This is what we did. This is what you work for. You know, man, my son did something in high school that I thought a couple times my wife at the time had put him up to. Right. So I'm at the club. You know, I got me a section. I got a couple bottles, got a couple honeys and all this. Right. My son, a freshman, he a sophomore this time. My son, a sophomore.
High school.
Yeah, he a sophomore in high school. He called me. He called my phone. Now, it's 1 in the morning. So I'm thinking something done went wrong at home. I step in the restroom to hear over the music. Son, what's up? You good? Yeah. What you doing? Oh, nothing. Just sitting here watching NBA TV. Oh, okay. I'm just sitting here watching some of these moves. Oh, okay. I wanted to know if you wanted to go to Lifetime right now and work on something. I'm like, right now? He like, yeah, I just seen some of these moves. I want to work on them while they fresh on my mind. I said, son, you want to go right now? Now, it's 1 a.m. on a Saturday. And I'm like, man, I know my wife done called and said, call your dad. And this she can't tell me come home. So she trying to manipulate the kids.
Right.
So,
yeah.
So, okay, cool. I lead a section, lead the bottles. Now, mind you, Lifetime was 24 hours at this time before the COVID. So we go to Lifetime. It's like 2 a.m. We work out till about 4. I come home. He go to bed. I go back out. So about another 2 weeks, 3 weeks went by and the same thing happened. And once it happened again, I realized it wasn't his mom. It was him. Once I saw he had that type of passion sitting around on a Saturday night when you could be running around with your high school friends and you rather call me to have me take you to Lifetime to work out. Once I saw seeing that, I started knowing that he was, I think, 14, 15 at the time. I knew he was taking it very, very seriously. So him getting a Duke and doing all that McDonald's All-American stuff, I already knew that was in him because like I told you, the message to the middle school girl when he said, no, I'm about to work. Then you tell me this in high school that you're trying to go to the gym at 1, 2 a.m, things like that allowed me not to be surprised because you put in too much work. And being around the game enough, I understand what a fluid jumper look like and what a jumper look like that somebody still need more work. And okay, I can look at his handle and tell he's been in the gym. Okay, I can look at he's still developing his handle. So, you know, just being a player development guy, you start recognizing the game. And, you know, so I wasn't surprised or any of that and shed a tear. So, I expected him to accomplish everything that he accomplished.
Well, look, man, we're so grateful to have him. And just run us through kind of how that came about, the initial way that, and I understand that he had a relationship with Doc Rivers or maybe was in the Boston Celtic locker room during the Trent Championship run with KG through your relationship. What was that about? How did he wind up in Milwaukee?
So here's how that came about. Doc Rivers' son with the Duke. And throughout the years, Sam Cassell, who's my best friend, him and Kevin, you know, I got four brothers that are my brothers for life. Aaron McKee, who was my mentor when I came in, showed me the ropes in Portland.
Sure.
Rasheed Wallace, who I met before we got to the league. We ended up being teammates. Sam Cassell and Kevin Garnett, you know, them is like, you know, we still talk all the time type brothers. Right. You know what I'm saying? You know, you're going to have a brotherhood. You're going to meet a lot of guys in the league, but I'm talking about guys that I was a pallbearer to Sam's mama. At her funeral, you know, that's like my brother. You know, I carried his mom out to church to the graveyard. You know what I'm saying? So just him spending all them years with Doc, I would take my son to the games living in Minnesota. And, you know, Doc would always ask me, you know, even when JR was missing, how your boy doing? So I already had a relationship with Doc through Sam, just being around Sam all the time. And we with the Clippers, because, you know, he done been everywhere with Doc except this last run. Sure. Doc called me and was telling me, look, man, you know, I put your son in a great opportunity. I'm going to put your son in a situation to succeed. I know he's a shooter. You know, if you look at the things I did with J.J. Redick, running him off down streets, like J.J. Redick had a career highs under me. I know how to use your son, blah, 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 blah. Then I knew he went into the bag of tricks real deep because, you know, me and Kev talk a lot on social media, sending each other messages. He called my phone like about 2 a.m. I'm like, man, what's up? He like, you know, we did a bunch of talking and he said, hey man, you know, Doc hit me, right? I was like, I know what this is. So Doc called Sam. He called, you know, Sam, my brother. Yeah. Sam called me. Yeah. Kevin called me. Like everybody.
KG,
that he
KG,
knew,
KG.
Man, okay. Everybody was blowing up my line. I'm like, damn, am I a free agent the way y'all calling? You know what I'm saying? The way my line was ringing. I'm like, damn, am I a free agent?
Can I get a 10 day?
I'm going to come out and play one day, and I'm going to need 9 on the table. I'm going to need 9 on the training table after this one day, but go on, sign me up. You know what I'm saying?
It'll be worth it.
It's one day. So, yes, you know, just throughout all that, and then I think it sealed the deal when Doc came and saw him. And, you know, it means a lot in this profession when a man that's accomplished as much as Doc. You were a former NBA player. Your son is an NBA player. You're a black man. You're a black father. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, plus, you know, Sam is like uncle to my kids. Kevin is Uncle Kevin to my kids. So uncles call Sam and all that. So, you know, to me, once Doc called and told JR, you know, the opportunity, because there was a couple of other opportunities out there, but I don't know if they was going to be as grand as the one. You know, you're going to come here, you know, you got a chance to earn you a starting spot. You know, Doc didn't want to just come and make no promise, like, you're going to start off the top. No, listen, you have a great chance of starting here because of this lineup, and you can come here and get the opportunities that you've been looking for. Because, you know, he came out of Toronto averaging 18. So, you know.
I know. He used to kill us. He used to kill us. I mean, he used to kill us like 5, 6, 7 years ago. Yeah. I remember some games in Toronto where he just took over down the strip.
So, so once Doc came and he sat down, we talked about the opportunity, you know, because in this business, sometimes, okay, like he had the opportunity to take a 2-year deal with some other teams, maybe as a backup, right? But you take them 2 years and you grab that money, okay, but that's where the ball might stop for you. You need to put yourself in a position to where you're always creating an opportunity for the next contract. Like, okay, I'm going to take this money right now, but once you take this money, is there anything after this? So sometimes you got to take a little less money for a bigger opportunity to get the more money later. And that was the mindset coming to Milwaukee, you know, because my son just came off a deal, 3 years, $50 million. So coming off $18, $19 million to go to the minimum, you know, that's like, man, but okay, you take that minimum, but the opportunity that you're going to be able to play and put yourself back in a position, you're young enough to be able to do that. You was a one and done. Like, think about it. My son in his 8th year in the league and you're only 26 at year 8.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So you, even if you did another 10, you'd be 38. That'd be 18 years. You know what I'm saying? You're not a big pounder guy. So you might, you know, bigs, you know, take a lot more beating and pounding on everybody. Not saying them guards don't be getting hit on them screens, but that post fight, that 4 and 5 position is something different.
Do you think Gary would have bet on himself in a city other than Milwaukee, or did Giannis and with Doc, Giannis and all that kind of pushed him over the top? Like,
I believe it was having, number one, belief in himself from his own work, but the things that Doc said to him, and then with Giannis being the paint force that he is, you know, that's going to create opportunities for you. It's going to get you open looks. And, you know, like when Doc was saying, if I run a down screen on you with Giannis, that big got to make a decision. Do he show on you and let Giannis slip lob, or do they let you come off? You know, a coach got to make a decision, you know, and he's been shooting 43% for his whole career. This ain't just like you got hot this year, you know, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, if you look at it, you done broke all the bench records, Ray Allen's record, Mike Redd record, all the bench records. So now teams got to make a decision, because if you show, if that big do any type of show, Giannis is going to slip and it's over with. You know, and if they don't show and you come off and get a clean look. So, you know, when JR started envisioning those type of things, it started looking like, okay, not only am I going to get an opportunity, but I'm able to play with a Hall of Famer, and I'm able to play with a guy that can really help me get my game off. He played with a Hall of Famer in Carmelo, but Carmelo was a perimeter player. And he was an ISO player. So that wasn't going to benefit him. You know, as a shooter, you want to play with a Patrick Ewing, a Dream, a Shaq, Lonzo Mourning, Giannis, somebody that is going to be able to command a double team and get me some open looks, the ball going to swing around the perimeter and things like that. So not only is it going to be an opportunity to play, but it's going to be an opportunity to succeed, because you can get to a team, coach throw you on the floor, okay, I need you just to defend the ball. Okay, that's some opportunity, but am I going to get an opportunity to be a complete basketball player?
Right, you know
what I'm saying? Because if you look at my son, he's not really a 3-and-D player. He can score at every level. But, you know, he'll get pigeonholed as 3-and-D. But really, this year, he was able to really show that he can score in the mid-range. He can score from the three. He can get to the hole. So I think this upcoming season will be one of his better years, because he's familiar with Doc. He's familiar with the system. I think from what he did in the playoffs, the staff believes anymore. The coaches believe anymore. The organization front office believes anymore. So I think he'll come in more confident and comfortable, because, you know, when you came during the summers and we had all those conversations, and then when the team struggled, he was the first sacrificial lamb to go to the bench. That kind of hurt.
But, yeah, and you know,
but this game is mental. Where your toughness at? Where your mental toughness? Where your tough spirit at? You know,
right,
so
right,
you know, you can't cry now. You can't. We had a talk. Hey, you can't bitch up now. You signed up for this. This is what it is.
No, sir. No, sir.
You know what I'm saying? Well, he understood that. But on the outside looking in, when my son get in a dark space or a sad space or whatnot, we ain't having that. That's where I'm coming in now. That's where I'm going back to me when you was 5, 6, 7 years old. I'm not hearing none of that. I'm not accepting none of that. And mm-hmm. I'm making you be accountable within your own spirit. And you got to have somebody behind you with the push. I don't care how much success you have. I think even with Michael Jordan, when he lost his father, he felt like he lost a mentor. He lost a push. He lost something. Even though Jordan was still going to be great, you know, the relationship, you know, I retired when my son was young. I've been a stay-at-home dad for the last 21 years. So all my kids have been born with me at home. You know, I retired when JR was 5. So I ended up getting full custody of him when he was 9 years old. And once I bought him in Minnesota, it's been me and him ever since, you know?
But look, man, and I saw it firsthand, Game 5, Indiana. You were sitting right next to me, courtside. I was at the broadcast table, and I was watching the interaction between you and JR. And you were coaching. You were getting into him. I mean, know, and he was having it. He had 33. He had a great game. He carried us in overtime. Hit big shot after big shot. But it wasn't like he was over there as a fan, like, oh, that's my boy. You was all like, you can do more than that. You gotta give me something else.
Yeah.
Give me more.
Because if you think about it, I think he was 0-7 before he went 7-15. Because he missed the first 7 and then hit 7 in a row. And I always use Ray Allen as an example because, you know, Doc Coach Ray, and I'll be like, son, Ray Allen would go 0-8 on Monday and then turn around Tuesday and go 10-10. You know, you got it, the percentages are what they are. So it's going to come. But as long as you stay, if you come into the game with a defensive mindset, you're going to get a few layups. You're going to get some passing lane steals, and you're going to get yourself going, and your offense going to come. Because at the end of the day, percentages determine offense. But at the end of the day, effort is always in your control. If your shot go in and out, that's 43 out of 100. But that effort on the defensive end, that defensive communication, being locked in on D, that's always on you. You can't make every shot, even if you take every shot. But that defensive effort is always on you. And as long as you play in D, you stay engaged mentally. You stay engaged with a toughness standpoint, and the shots eventually going to come because that's what the percentages mean.
Well, and you probably already covered this, but so you come in kind of a make good kind of betting on yourself contract 1 year, have a really great second half of the season after you started off. I think he had an injury, shot 27% the first 10 games, but then like 44% from that point on from the 3-point line.
Yeah.
And then the playoffs, 60%+, shot, you know, better than anybody on catch and shoot threes. Did you think you'd be able to be in a different situation with a bigger contract? What was the thought process of coming back to Milwaukee after that first take the minimum, make the best out of it, let's see what's going on? Now you guys are back, and he's still under, you know, he's underpaid for what he brings to the table.
Sweetheart deal. 2 years,
for the Bucks.
Seven.
But what was the thought process this second time around coming to the Bucks?
Well, the second time coming back was, now that you're familiar with everything and everybody's familiar with you, it was all about usage rate. You know, what is the usage rate going to be? What is the opportunity going to be? Okay, well, you can slide over here for a couple dollars more, but what's your usage rate and what's your opportunity going to be? You know what I'm saying? Like, here, you still got a chance to keep running it up. You still got a chance to keep growing and keep developing. And Giannis is still young. He's still in his prime. Giannis coming back next year, averaging 30 and beasting again. He's probably going to come back again and make first team. So with knowing with all that exists, and now the second half of the season, things turned around for you. The things in the playoffs turned around for you. Now I think the team, and like I said, the front office, the staff is ready to embrace you differently. Last year, they would still figure you out in the beginning. He don't touch the ball for the first 6 or 7 minutes. And then when he get the ball, it's like, you damn near got to make this shot. Or after 7 minutes of not having the ball, I'm about to take a shot. And now you probably got to do some off balance, some wacky. And that's how you averaging that 25%, because once the scoring distribution started becoming better, everybody, the team started coming better, you know, because they was very top heavy with Dame and Giannis just 30 and 30. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah. But the crazy part about it, G, is that I call it the triumvirate with Junior, with AJ Green, with Kevin Porter Jr. I mean, their offensive rating, the three of them with Giannis, was 99% to 134 points per 100 possessions. Defense, 94 points per 100 possessions. 40%, 40 plus 40 net rating. The force in 15, 16 turn. The defense of that small shooting group was the key to me. Not just the fact that they could knock down open threes, but these guys, your son, I love his defensive mindset, Gary, just as much as his ability to knock down that catch and shoot jumper. He gets in there, he locks in defensively, man, and he's tough. He's talking trash.
So here's how that works, though. You got Giannis in there, but now the guys that you named are all young guys in their 20s still with great lateral movement.
Legs, baby. Young legs, bro.
You know, I played the post, so I wasn't stressing lateral. All I needed to do was stay strong and hold my ground and force you into that turnaround fade. You know what I'm saying? I can't let you get that arm bar. I got to put that arm bar up like a freeway block. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
I gotta, if you hit me with the turnaround fade, left shoulder, right shoulder going baseline, hey, I got to live with it. I can't have you
live with that.
Baseline, up and down. I can't give it all to you now. I'm going to give you this turnaround fade. And I know you're going to take
with
that first dribble.
With a head in your face, head in your face.
And on that second dribble, I know you're trying to bump me and create space. So now I know when you turn fading, and that's you got to live with it, you know, because great offense going to always be great defense. But think about it. You name three guys that are all in their 20s. So they still all have lateral movement. They still got that extra bounce of energy. They still got that young life and young legs. You know, when you're 25, 26, and you play Monday, Tuesday, your legs is different on Tuesday when you're 31, 32. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So, being young and being able to bounce back. So when you look at those and, Dame's a smaller guard and never really been. No, Dame's best D is come down and score back on you.
It's his offense. Yeah, right.
Let me wear my guy out. You know, I'm going to get 31, dude might get 22, but that was the best D. You couldn't stop. My best D is you can't stop me. You know what I'm saying? Whereas with those guys, by them all going through the process of having to be a role player and having to be accept leftover offense in a sense, they always was out there in a defensive mindset because JR had to wait for Giannis and Dame. AJ had to wait. Kevin Porter had to wait. So by them guys already being in a mindset of having to wait on their turn offensively, they know they had to come in defensively. So when they got their opportunity, they still play like that. And I think that's why that trio of guards really made the thing successful. And with them guys being younger, they pushed the pace more. They pushed the pace. They played faster. Because you notice when they started playing faster, they started playing better. Because if you watch the games, Dame will bring the ball down every time. If it wasn't Giannis, it was Dame going to break it down a little bit early on. Middleton, you know, could bully his way to break it down because he done earned his stripes there. So he might wave Dame off. But 99% of the time, they team scored Dame. He going to dribble it down.
Slow, methodical.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It was the game was moving too slow. And it was almost being like the back in the day when we played, we're going to come down, run. They call it either C4, turn four, C5, turn five. The two guard going to come off the five or the four and dump it in. Now it's four out, one in. You know what I'm saying? Whereas the game now, it's pass, cut, movement. You know, so if you look at the beginning of the season, early on in the beginning of the season, it was like 80s, 90s basketball. The second half of the season,
slugfest.
We done start getting into the summer league where we up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down. Because I seen a stat on ESPN. They was talking about like Gary was leading the NBA in three-point percentage, shooting it within 26 seconds on the shot clock.
Right.
By time 18 on the shot clock, the shot already up. Like, he was leading the NBA in percentage-wise because the Bucks started playing faster.
Yeah.
And so to that point, and this is the last question, and we're going to let you go. We talked about the infusion of youth, and in fact, Doc had trust in the young guys coming out there. Defensively, they showed what they could do, and they're going to, you know, knock down their shots offensively. Where do you see this Bucks team in terms of how successful they can be this upcoming season with what they have right now? A lot of people are writing them off as a 5 through 7, 8 seed. Where do you see them as currently constructed right now?
Well, I'm looking at this, right? Indiana was dominating out there. Halliburton's gone for next season, and you lost Miles. You lost two starters. I don't see Indiana being back there. You know what I'm saying? So I truly believe with adding Miles there, that's going to help Giannis, because if you look at Brook, they were isolated. They was targeting him on D. So now I think everything that that Turner brings to the table is an upgraded version of Lopez. And this ain't no diss to Lopez. I'm just saying Turner got younger legs. He can pick and pop, and he can pick and roll. And trying to get to that rim between his length and Giannis' length going to be tough. Yeah, you know, yeah. that's going to be tough. You know, Miles got Turner got better lateral. So I think from a defensive standpoint, you just talked about those guys, the defensive trio. Now to add Turner, who's younger, longer, more athletic, I'm sure baseline to baseline could beat Lopez in a sprint. He's going to add a certain level of pressure, because do he pick and pop? Do he pick and roll? So it's going to put a lot of pressure on teams. I see them being way better. When you look at the Knicks, you know, they're going to do some new things, but I think they're going to struggle.
Yeah.
You know, I think they're going to struggle. So I think the East is really going to kind of be open, man. I don't see Brooklyn making too much noise. So
Orlando with the Banchero and the Wagners and that whole, what they're doing, that they had a couple of nice additions. Desmond Bain, I think, is there now.
Yeah.
You see them as a problem?
I still see the team being somewhere in that top three. And depending on, you know, how guys, you know, whoever might have a breakout, maybe this will be Gary's chance for a breakout season, you know, and they stay in that, they be in a one or two seed. But I think that I see them with that Turner move and Gary coming back, you know, because now if you think about it, you got another floor spacer in Turner, you got a role guy, so you can run that same pin down on Gary with Miles, and it'll be the same thing.
But listen, man, we're going to let you go. I appreciate you coming by and spending time at here, District. And, man, love your son. Love what he brings to the table. And your story, man, is one for the ages. We got to get together and talk, man. It's a movie screenplay in there somewhere, man.
We're going to be up in Milwaukee, you know, now that my son up the freeway, you know, it's beautiful, because the only place you could have played closer was been actually in Minnesota, because the closest team, we live in Minnesota. So Milwaukee and Chicago would have been the closest. So being right there in Milwaukee, man, you know, it's a 5-hour drive. I'm probably getting there in about 4.5. You know what I'm saying? Been in some of them straightaways where them trees is at. I can push the gas a little bit. So we getting there. You know, we might come down Friday, catch a Sunday game at noon and get back home, you know what I'm saying, so that he can feel supported in. Also, I want my kids, you know, when I was growing up, man, Michael Jackson and Magic Johnson was like mythical figures that I would never be able to touch. They was like aliens to me, like, oh, that's Magic Johnson, that's Michael Jackson. I want my younger sons to not look at them guys as mythical figures, because you can talk to a Giannis, you see your brother, you're around these locker rooms. When the Boston Celtics come to town with Sam, you know, you talk to Tatum, you're around these guys. So it's a touchable, reachable dream. You can have a conversation about this dream. It's not just a dream. These ain't mythical figures. You can touch these guys. You can be inspired by that. And just want to keep them around that inspiration, man.
Yeah, man. Well, you are inspiring, man. Your story is inspiring. What you're doing with your kids is inspiring, man. And we appreciate you stopping by here.
I appreciate you and your son doing this.
We go hook up in Milwaukee when you come to Milwaukee, man, for sure.
Appreciate it.
All right. Here, District, old school, Marcus Johnson, along with my son, Chris Johnson. And, man, Gary Trent Sr., talk about uncut. Talk about raw. I mean, that was as raw of an interview and honest openness that you'll find. And I can see why his son, Gary Trent II, Gary Trent Jr., man, he's one of the most locked in guys, Chris, I've ever been around on the basketball floor. And you can just kind of understand the relationship with him and his dad and some of the things his dad has taken him through.
Yeah.
Why he's like that. So you can see that. But anyway, listen, man, there's a new phenomenon kind of going around. That's really interesting to me. It's this general manager's role in college basketball to help kind of manage, I guess, the NIL, all the money situation, the talent situation.
Yeah.
And one of the things that's happening is that a lot of current players have been enlisted to come in as general manager. So you got Damian Lillard, just announced as the GM of Weber State. Steph Curry, he's the assistant GM down at Davidson. Trae Young, assistant GM at Oklahoma. You know, former great Shaq is up at Sacramento State. I think he's got a son that's playing for Sac State this year. Adrian Wojnarowski is the general manager at St. Bonaventure. Terrence Mann, current player at Florida State. What is this all about? I mean, in terms of, let's talk about the current players.
MJ, you got to look at it through a lens of each case is different, because I don't think Woj is doing a lot of work. Woj is flying to the Eurobasket championships. He's over in Europe. He's in gyms all summer. He's like on the recruiting trail, really doing what he needs to do to build the relationships and to get guys. Now, other guys that might not necessarily need to do that type of stuff, like a Woj, you know, Shaq, you got Damian Lillard. These are name brand guys, name value guys.
Steph, Trae Young.
But these guys are probably bringing a level of not only notoriety and association, but there's probably some money, some financial considerations involved. I'm not sure if they donated to the program. I'm not sure how that works, but I think that they're not just coming in being hired. Sure, that you're not on salary, but I'm sure that each administration at least got some type of donation out of these guys and then give them this honorary, I don't know if it's an honorary role. Let's say they are in the throes of it all and really building out rosters and building teams for like highly competitive situations. I think that they help in sort of closing guys. If they can make the call to a guy that may be on the fence, you know what I mean? And then you got Shaq giving them a call, or Damian Lillard giving them a call, Trae Young, et cetera. I think their main value will be there. I'm not sure if they're, you know, what, like you see Trae and who else was an assistant GM. So that means that there's somebody really doing the heavy lifting. Right. And then we kind of bring in Trae to, you know, kind of close the deal.
And don't let me forget Ronald Dupree. He was a Bucks.
Great dude,
Bucks front office. Great dude. Played at LSU with Big Baby and John Brady, the coach down there. I did their games when he was in college. So
Tyrus Thomas, who
I thought would be a much better pro than he turned out to be. So Ronald Dupree is back at LSU, and he would be one of those guys who's doing the heavy lifting, and his experience in the Bucks front office, talent evaluator, putting together pieces and all that. And you just made a great point. You talk about the European, more established European players to come over and play some college basketball. And the game in college is definitely skewing older right now in terms of 23, 24, 25 year olds. So it's a different world, man. Within a while, you used to be able to go to Crenshaw High School or Fremont and scout a good high school player. And that was the extent of it, the coach. Now you need a whole staff of GMs and specialists to do this stuff.
Well, you need grown men. I mean, the college game is now, it mirrors the professional game. Guys are getting paid several hundred thousand dollars to millions of dollars a year. So you got to have the infrastructure that mirrors a place where athletes are getting paid a couple of hundred to $1 million a year or millions of dollars a year. So it doesn't surprise me. But last point, you know, Woj, he signed a couple. Woj's recruiting class, the players he's brought in.
Yeah.
St. Bonaventure's is going to be highly competitive, potentially NCAA tournament team. Woj is pulling some rabbits out of hats, to use Gary Trent's
Well, now, is this a full-time gig for Woj, or is he
full-time? He moved in. So Woj moved in above the bar at, like, St. John. There's, like, this college bar. So he moved in up there, I think, and he has, like, a crib. Like, no, they had an ESPN special, and I watched it. Like, Woj is literally in the mix. He's not, like, satellite, you know, somewhere away. He's in the mix of St. Bonaventure doing it big, man.
Oh, man, that's great to hear. Great to hear, man. Woj, only Woj, living above the bar, right on campus, man, doing his thing. That's good to hear. What else is going on out there, man?
So we have some lists. We have a list, actually, that was curated by Twitter, Bucks Twitter guy by the name of @BucksRim. So he put together a list, MJ. I don't know if you were able to pull it up already, but of the top Bucks players of all time, on one side of the list, he has, I believe, his picks for the top Bucks players. And then he kind of crowdsourced the other side via Bucks Twitter. People voted, chimed in. And ultimately, the list ended up like this. Number one is
Kareem
Giannis.
Giannis
on over, both lists.
Over Kareem. Okay.
Over Kareem. We have, and once again, recency bias will always be really prevalent in these type of lists.
Sure.
Number two, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Okay.
Number three, the Bucks realm, the number three player that he had was Sidney Moncrief.
Okay.
Bucks Twitter said Chris Middleton. Mm. Number four, the big O on both sides, Oscar Robertson.
Okay.
Number five, on the Bucks Realm side of things, he has Chris Middleton as number five. And on the Bucks Twitter side of things, they put in Sidney Moncrief.
Okay.
So the next one is you, Marcus Johnson. You made it. You just missed the top five, MJ.
Okay.
After
on both sides?
On both sides is Marcus.
Okay. All
right. On both sides is Marcus.
Not bad. Number six all the time. Yeah.
Not horrible. You know, I think it's a little low in my opinion, but you know, I think you're. It's hard. Anyway, we'll get to it. Ray Allen's number seven. Both sides. Number Michael Redd is number eight. The great Michael Redd. So you got two of the greatest shooters in Bucks history. Yeah. Seven and eight. Number nine.
Big dog.
Big dog via Bucks Twitter, but Bucks Realm says Bobby Dandridge.
Okay. Nah,
Bobby D getting some love.
I like
number,
that.
For number nine and the 10th pick for this all-time Bucks deal brought to you by at Bucks Realm. On the Bucks Realm side of things, it was Glenn Robinson. On the Bucks Twitter side of things, take a guess, MJ. The 10th greatest Buck in the history of Milwaukee.
Is it an older era guy, a newer era guy?
New era.
Not can't be. Oh, man.
You want a hint?
Yes, please. Give me a hint. I'm drawing a blank.
I can't. If I give you any hint, you'll get it automatically because I can't even say what it is.
The 10th greatest Buck of all time.
According to Buck's Twitter, the 10th greatest Buck of all time, according to Buck's Twitter, who is it, MJ? Think about it. Rack your brain. It's not Drew. It's not any of those kind of guys, but it's someone that really has meant a lot to this franchise and was a key member of the championship squad 2021.
Oh, Brook Lopez.
There you go.
Yeah, okay.
I didn't want to spend too much time on it.
I'm glad to see Brooke get his flowers.
What are your thoughts on the list?
Well, I'm glad to see Brooke get recognized.
Okay.
Definitely glad to see him get recognized. I have no problems with it. I'm honored to be, you know, six. I could be a little higher. That wouldn't be a problem either. But to be six on an all-time list like that, Kareem and Giannis. You talk about what did you call it? Recency bias.
Yeah,
that's one of these new age terms that old guys like me had never really plugged into until just now. Recency bias. So, but what Giannis has done, all time, everything. You know, points, rebounds. I think he's gonna.
And we're talking Kareem didn't play as many years in the
Bucks uniform.
I think that's the number one factor.
I hope with this recency bias that now Giannis is number one on both sides, both
lists.
Yes, he is. Good. And so what this says to me, Chris, this is the value, and you can't put a dollar amount next to it, obviously, but just in terms of the respect that you get from being committed to one organization. And this is why I think Giannis is a Milwaukee Buck for the foreseeable future. I won't say forever. I hope forever. But I think he values that. And it's been reciprocated by the fans out there, by the people who watch this team. They love Giannis. He loves the city. And so I'm really, really happy about that, that the appreciation that this young man deserves was given in a poll like this. So that to me, that's my major takeaway from this, is that Giannis deserves to be at the top of the list. Look, you drop 50 points in a closeout game in the NBA Finals. You're the Finals MVP. You're a two-time Defensive Player of the Year. You've been here, 10, 11 years now, whatever it is. He deserves it. He earns it.
And I agree.
So I'm really happy to see that happen. So
I just think the big O is a little low, but it's whatever.
I think Big O may have been here in Milwaukee for
how many years?
Maybe three.
This list makes sense.
Maybe three.
Bucks fans are real, and I appreciate Bucks fans for being that way, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Because they're placing guys that had longer tenures and were still performed at a high level over some of the greats that were only here for a flash in the pan.
And that's why I like the Bobby Dandridge inclusion, because he was an integral part of it.
Yeah,
I think he averaged 20 points that one year in the NBA playoffs, the year the Bucks won the championship in 1971, you know, 50 years before they won it again in 2021.
Sure.
And Bobby Dandridge is one of a Hall of Famer, recent Hall of Famer, a really good friend of mine, and he's one of the all-time just toughest guys to either defend or try and score against. And people don't, he's underrated in that sense. Oh, he's a cold player.
I love hearing him talk. I think I've met him, and he's just like one of the just such a character person. I mean, he's just got it all, you know.
And played college basketball down at Norfolk State in Virginia with the great Pee Wee Kirkland, one of the great New York playground legends. Was a college teammate, and Pee Wee's game had to be toned down, obviously, from the Rucker Harlem type flash and dash that he exhibited. But Bobby's got some great stories about that whole situation, man. And so, Well, look, man, here, District, great show. With thanks again to Gary Trent Sr. for the uncut, raw version of kind of what it was like.
Here, District After Dark.
Oh, Here, District After Dark, without question. But we're just so happy and honored to have his son, Gary Trent Jr., come back to the Bucks, man. And I look forward to some huge things from him this season. So, and I get a firsthand glimpse of just that eye of the tiger that he possesses. He gets it from his daddy. So that's a good thing. All right, here, District, we're out of here. We'll see you next time.